It's Inside Vancouver Opera. My name is Ashley Daniel Foote. And you hear the orchestra tuning. After the orchestra tunes, we wait for the conductor. And so today we are very lucky to be in conversation with Vancouver Opera's new music director, Jacques Lacombe.
That's the job of the conductor. It's basically to put the musicians and the group itself in the best position to perform. But you're not performing. They are doing the job. So that's how I conceive my role.
Jacques has worked all over the world, including at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, the Metropolitan Opera in New York, in Munich, Turin, Berlin, the Canadian Opera Company in Toronto. He's worked with some of the finest soloists all across the world, from Yo-Yo Ma to Emmanuel Axe to Joshua Bell to Renee Fleming to Joyce DiDonato. The list goes on and on and on. In addition to being the music director of Vancouver Opera, Jacques is the music director of the Orchestre Classique de Montréal, and he has been the music director of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. We're so excited to have Jacques with us as the new music director. And this conversation, he shares his excitement and his unbridled passion for opera and conducting. I think you'll be as excited as I am to hear what Jacques has to say.
I was first trained as an organist. And fairly early after I started studying organ, I think I was 14 or 15 years old, I was appointed the organist at the cathedral in Trois-Rivières in my hometown. Where I was at the cathedral, they had at the time what's probably the best children's choir in Canada. And they were doing very, very, you know, interesting repertoire and all that. So the chorus master was a priest and a well-trained musician. And I forgot if it was my first year or second year being an organist. I already had started study conducting. So we did the Mozart Requiem with the choir and an orchestra that I put together for this project. The chorus director, who was conducting the performance, asked me in rehearsal if I could conduct one or two movements because he wanted to hear how it sound, you know, in the church. Because as I don't know if people know, but very often the worst place to listen to an orchestra is on the conductor's podium.
Right.
So sometimes you need, and that's part of the job actually, to project yourself as if you were in the house and imagine how the sounds is back there. And one way to do it, sometimes it's with an assistant or you go yourself in the hall or wherever you perform. So the story is that chorus master wanted to go in the church to listen for the balance and everything. And he asked me to conduct, you know, the two movements of the Mozart Requiem. And I was like, whoa. I got hooked, I guess.
Do you remember what the movements were?
I think it was the introduction. So the very beginning with the fugue. The Kyrie, and then I think it was a tuba mirum.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool and very special. And of course, you know, when you're an organist, I was the accompanist of this choir, so you also have this relationship with the member of the choir. So they were also eager to see how I was conducting. And I was so well prepared that apparently I looked like a fish on the podium because I was miming all the words and everything. So.
And you started studying music at age 11.
The music came to my life a bit like an accident because I'm the oldest in my family. My parents weren't musicians. My father was a shoemaker. It just happened that we moved in a house where there was a piano in the basement. It was an old piano with the mechanic piano with the rolls and that, and everything. So and I start to, you know, to bang on the piano and play stuff, you know, by ear. I had studied in a private school, in elementary school. I sang in the chorus. I think we studied a bit the flute and the off instruments, like xylophone and stuff like that. So I knew how to read music a little bit, but nothing more than the general, you know, musical training given at that time in that school. And then we moved in that house, as I said, and then I started to, you know, play. And the first thing that I managed to play by myself was one of my dad's favorite tune, which was The Entertainer by Scott Joplin. When I was a kid, I was more into sports. I played hockey in the winter and baseball in the summer. But my parents saw that there was an interest for me in music. So when I was in sixth grade in our system in Quebec, so about 11 years old, I decided to take piano lessons. And I became a member of a boys' choir. That sort of became my family. And slowly that took a bit more time, you know, in my schedule. And the sport went a little bit, you know, on the sideways, out the window. And that's when I was 11. And when I was 18, I was appointed music director of that chorus. With the choir that I was singing in Cap de Madeleine, there's one of the most beautiful organs in Canada. It's a Casavant from 1963, a beautiful instrument. So when I was singing there and I was studying piano. So, and I became, when I was like 12, assistant organist, meaning turning pages, pulling stops and stuff like that. And the organist told me, you know, in a few years when you're a bit more advanced on the piano, you could start to study organ. So I decided to study organ when I was about 14. And then the church gig came, you know, fairly quickly after that at the cathedral. And my second organ teacher after that was a great, great musician. He opened my eyes to the possibility of becoming a conductor. When I look back in when I was playing hockey or baseball, I like to be in a team, you know, and not leading in the sense of, you know, directing stuff, but just as bringing people together. I guess that's something that I really like to do as a kid, you know, playing sports. As soon as I started to study music, when I first started on the piano, I would bring friends home, I would write little arrangements, and without knowing, I was already playing the role of a conductor.
When we think of conductors of the past, sometimes there is a stereotype of a conductor being a tyrant and being scary. You've talked about how that's absolutely not going to give you what you're looking for as an artist.
It would be very hard for a conductor nowadays to behave like old-time conductors, like, wow, you know, a Toscanini who, you know, could... Yeah, it was really frightening. From the very beginning when I started conducting, I always felt that I was first and above all a musician. A musician with that specific role of leading and conducting. In my approach, I also like to give room to the musicians to be able to express themselves. Of course, my job is to unify everything and to sort of bring the concept and the interpretation and all of that, but to make it in a way that everybody feels involved and have their role, and all the roles are important.
Thinking now about the differences between orchestral music and opera, as a conductor, how do you approach those differences? How would you describe those for you and your process?
It's more or less the same process, except for the fact that, of course, in opera, you're dealing with different layers and elements. You have the text, you have all the elements of the human voice, the chorus and everything. And I have always thought that the most beautiful instrument on earth is the human voice. Sometimes when I work with, you know, on the symphonies and stuff, or, you know, orchestral music, very often I force myself to start from the point of view, how would you play that music if it was to be sung? Because I think it's the most natural way to be musical, because then you have the breath, you have the pacing of the phrase. And for me, I think it serves me as an orchestra conductor to work regularly with singers. I like to think that whenever I conduct a symphony or whatever orchestral work, it is influenced by my constant contact with singers. On the other side, the fact of working at the opera, I can bring to that the experience of working in details with an orchestra, because, you know, the danger for someone who only conducts opera is eventually, without knowing it, to confine yourself in the sole role of an accompanist. And the role of a conductor in the pit is not only that, as a many aspects. Sometimes, of course, you follow, sometimes mm-hmm. you lead. And in addition to that, you shape the colors of the orchestra, because ultimately, the orchestra is also one of the characters very often in the opera.
I've heard from other musicians that work for you that you don't often use a score now to conduct.
It's not a goal per se, but I find it very useful. Whenever I can conduct without a score, I prefer to do that. As a conductor, one way to communicate with people is to have people look at you somehow. And the best way I found that to have people looking at you, it's look at them. Then there's this exchange, you know, this connection. So that's one element. The other thing is when you don't use a score, it forces you to see a bit further in advance what's coming. And I like to think that when performing, it gives you perhaps a better ability to have the longer view and to shape the music differently, because then you go for the big form. Again, it's possible to do it, obviously, with the score. And the other thing, it doesn't apply so much at the opera, although sometimes it does, but when I conduct symphonies, the fact of not having a music stand in front of me, the music stand somehow is like a miniature wall between you and the orchestra. And whenever I can get rid of that, then you feel that you're really at the heart and center of the orchestra. And that's why I like to do that. And it also allows you to travel light.
You're our new music director of Vancouver Opera, and you're following in the footsteps of our conductor emeritus, Jonathan Darlington. I'd love to talk a little bit about what's exciting and what your plans are in the seasons to come in your new role.
It's very moving for me to be here. I've made my debut with the company 20 years ago. And from the very beginning, I had, you know, an incredible contact with the musicians' chorus and the team. You know, my very first time I conducted in Vancouver, one of the first jobs I had was music director of the ballet, of the Les Grands Ballets Canadiens in Montreal, the ballet company in Montreal. Yes. So that was my first contact with the musical scene in Vancouver. And musicians who played for that were in part members of an orchestra that doesn't exist, unfortunately, anymore, the Radio-Canada, the CBC Chamber Orchestra. And they spoke about me to the management of CBC. And then I was invited and I did a few things with CBC. And of course, some of those musicians were also playing in the Vancouver Orchestra. So I guess that's how my name became known a little bit here. And eventually, so I was invited the first time to come with the opera. And ever since, I think I've done some 10 productions or so with the company. So that means almost like every other year I was here. I've always had a good rapport. I love the city. I mean, I love this place. And just the vibe of the company. Each time I came, I always had, you know, good experiences. I mean, I work, as you said, you know, all over the place. I've had positions in Europe. I've worked quite a bit in the States. And after all these years, one thing that I find is probably the most challenging is how to build a team around you, you know, a team that's capable of working together. And every single time I came here, I felt that a company was capable of doing that. So that's something very, very special that you don't find everywhere. So just to get the right people at the right place to put the interest of the show, you know, and to put yourself at the service of that. And it doesn't always happen like that. So, and here, and I've worked under different leaderships with the company, and I always felt that was something that was constantly there. And I mean, for me, that makes me feel really good to join a company like that. And as you've mentioned, I've had, like, you know, two very good predecessors, Jonathan Darlington and before that, David Agler.
You know, when you think of the moment that we're in an opera, there's so much discussion about the repertoire and how we are confronting and interrogating our repertoire. And that's a tough some ways to look at work that's written so long ago. And we can always find numerous issues that we need to solve or deal with. I wonder how you think about that in terms of programming.
One should never forget the past. Always remember your roots, where you come from. And that applies to our culture also. You know, for good or bad things, if you refuse to look at the past because you see things that you don't like, I think it's the wrong way to go. It's to learn from, you know, from what was good and what was not so good and try to integrate it into our today's society, hopefully, you know. And you know, when in 20 or 30 years or 50 years from now, people will look at what we're doing and they will also have, you know, a different take on what we're. So that's the normal process of, you know, the human evolution. The key question then is how to present those works and even modern works and topics in the best possible and respectful way. And I think that if you approach that with open mind, there's almost no limit as long as it's done with those parameters. And that always includes, you know, quality and honesty and respect for the work that you're doing.
I was chatting with Les earlier today, Les Dollar, our head of music, and he wanted me to remind you of a time when you were conducting Carmen.
Oh my God. I think I know what you're going.
Something happened. I don't know how it happened when you're on the podium. And for a moment, you vanished from the conductor cam because we have these cameras that are trained on you. And Les was like, oh, do I need to go on?
Yeah, I basically stabbed myself. it happened very quickly. It was the beginning of Act 2 of Carmen. Fortunately, we were doing the dialogue version. So I when the accident happened at the end of the first number in Act 2, which is a, you know, accelerando, so the music goes faster and faster. And the baton that I use are handmade for me.
Really?
And
Where are they made?
It's a friend of mine in Quebec who made them. And on opening night here, I used a new one and I noticed that the tip was a bit sharper. And at the end of that number, I hit my finger in my left hand and it went through the finger.
What?
Yeah, I had a shock. And at one point, I just left it for a fraction of a second and the thing was hanging to my finger. And I thought to myself, it needs to come out, not to break. And then I was bleeding a little bit. So I put, you know, the other fingers to hold it. And as soon as the number was finished, I went down and asked the concertmaster, I said, I need a Band-Aid. And one of the divines had a Band-Aid and she gave it to me right away. I put it back and I went on and carried on with the show. It hurt like crazy.
Oh my
but,
gosh.
But yeah, that's, as they say, the show must go on.
What an amazing opportunity to hear some insights from Vancouver Opera's new music director, Jacques Lacombe. Well, my name is Ashley Daniel Foote, and you've been listening to Inside Vancouver Opera, a very special episode. Be sure to get your tickets for our next opera, Don Pasquale, which coincidentally will be conducted by the maestro himself, Jacques Lacombe. Come and see all of the wonderful things that he was talking about. Your tickets can be purchased at vancouveropera.ca. As always, thanks to our wonderful audio producer, Mac McGilvery, and I'll see you at the opera.